Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We just heard President Trump in a press conference over the last hour or so talking about a little bit about questions linked to impeachment. For more on this now, we have Charlie Jacobs with us, Associate Professor of Political Science at St. Norbert College. Charlie, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Well, there's a lot that the president talked about, but when it comes to what we know about the efforts to impeach the president, what we saw in that memo of his conversation with the Ukrainian president, what did you hear anything new or interesting in what the president had to say?
No, nothing new. I mean, obviously, he's defending his conversation and its content. I think he's trying to tell the American people that he believes the content is not objectionable in any way and that it doesn't rise to the level of an impeachable offense. Of course, that's a really a political question rather than a legal one. And so that's the kind of issue that's just going to have to be discussed and determined both in the court of public opinion as well as the halls of Congress. That's where this is really going to be determined. So I think what he's trying to do is set a narrative about what he did that tries to preempt anything that the Democrats might want to do in the House of Representatives.
Now, as described in this memorandum, the summary of the president's conversation with the president of the Ukraine, they talk about the Bidens. The president appears to invite cooperation between the Ukrainian government, the United States Attorney General, the president's personal attorney, Rudolph Giuliani. What do you make of that?
Well, it does seem like an unusual scenario, primarily because if there's suspicion of a crime or corruption, it would be the purview of the U.S. Attorney's Office and the Justice Department to look into that. And, of course, they may rely upon information gathering from other areas, but it's particularly the purpose of those kinds of arms of law enforcement in the United States to do the investigations. And then to include what is tantamount to a private citizen, even though Rudy Giuliani obviously works closely with the President of the United States as his personal attorney. It's sort of an odd request to have a private citizen like that dealing with these kinds of accusations of corruption, as well as what is, in essence, foreign policy for the United States, something that the State Department frowns upon, private citizens engaging in serving as a mouthpiece for the United States or engaging in these kinds of talks with foreign entities.
That Giuliani has acclaimed, and I don't think this has been confirmed by the State Department, but he has claimed that the State Department asked him to undertake interactions in Ukraine.
In a rather vague statement from the State Department last night, they seemed to indicate that they hadn't solicited that kind of help. But again, the statement was so vague, it didn't really have very much substantive content to lead anyone to know whether or not there was some engagement that they asked for with Giuliani in this regard. So again, there's sort of mystery upon obfuscation, upon wonderment about exactly what is going on, because most of the statements, you know, reveal some, but not everything that the public and I think Congress would like to know about these deals.
We're waiting to see if whistleblower information from the person who apparently raised this issue of this call, though also reportedly other issues. We're waiting to see what Congress will get when it relates to that. And of course, what the public would see. We might see nothing. We might see lots. I don't know. How important is that part of the story?
I think it's important because from what we understand, it's a contemporaneous hearing of what was going on in this conversation. And remember, what was released today was not a verbatim transcript of the conversation. And so what we're going to have is an intelligence professional who is going to be interpreting what the president said and what the conversation was about and how that relates to our ability to conduct foreign affairs with a country like the Ukraine. And so I think that kind of perspective is going to be interesting, and to see what was contained in that whistleblower report and what the concerns were is going to be illuminating to exactly what drove this process to unearth what's going on with the president and his relations with the Ukrainian president.
Talking to Charlie Jacobs about today's press conference from President Trump, the ongoing now impeachment inquiry proceedings just announced yesterday by leaders of the U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. We'll get back to Charlie Jacobs in just a few minutes. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. We are talking about impeachment efforts against President Trump, his press conference today, the memorandum about his conversation with the president of the Ukraine. You can join in if you have thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Charlie Jacobs stays with us from St. Norbert College. Quick reminder, you can pledge in support of our conversations here, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Charlie, taking a step back from the day's news, give us the long view. What happens next now that this impeachment inquiry is started?
Well, the interesting thing is I'm not sure anybody really knows, because the rules are vague. The Constitution is vague about how the process unfolds, and we've only really done this two other times. And so there's a lot of freedom for the Democrats in the House to see how this unfolds. Right now, they're doing investigations of the president in various aspects of it in up to about six different committees. So in essence, they're already doing an impeachment inquiry, and they don't have to vote on anything. That's been done in the past, but they have the freedom not to sort of create a formal process. If they don't want to, they could actually just move to a vote on some articles of impeachment that they write up very quickly. So it sort of remains to be seen exactly how Pelosi wants to handle this. And I think part of it is she's trying to see how many votes she has. So how quickly or how slowly she goes, I think, depends on the evidence that they start to collect and whether or not it's convincing enough to her caucus, as well as maybe some Republicans, that they move forward with the vote in the House to actually affirm articles of impeachment. Because remember, that's only one step in this process. And we sometimes conflate the idea of impeachment with the removal of the president, but it's actually a two-step process.
Right. We've had two presidents, I think it is, impeached, meaning the House voted to impeach them, but then acquitted in a trial by the Senate, presided over, I think, by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court.
That's correct. I mean, I like to sort of describe the impeachment or removal process in terms of the television show Law and Order, which is sort of very formulaic. The first half hour is always the investigation, and it ends with an indictment, and then we turn over the whole case to the court system. Well, that's kind of what happens here. The House conducts an investigation, and then if they believe that the evidence they've collected rises to the level of impeachment, they in essence indict the president, and it shoots over to the Senate, where they conduct a full-blown trial, although it doesn't really match what you're going to see in real life. But the jurors are, in essence, the 100 senators, and both the president and then the House of Representatives would put on the case to determine whether or not it's convincing enough to those sitting there in the Senate to convict him, which would result in his removal. And that, of course, takes two-thirds of the sitting senators.
Before we move on to what that would take in the Senate, let's stay in the House for a minute. You mentioned drafting articles of impeachment. I've seen differences among Democrats, apparently, versus I'll call it a skinny impeachment, just looking at this Ukraine issue versus, like, hold on, can we look at the Mueller probe and say the president obstructed justice when he fired James Comey, when he directed others to fire Robert Mueller? Emoluments, is the president in violation of the Constitution when his business takes money from foreign governments? So just the one thing or the laundry list, what are the pros and cons there, Charlie?
Well, I think that if you're more laser focused and you find what many might agree is the most egregious charge, right, the article that might get the most support, you know, if you're a prosecutor, you want to be able to convince the jury easily rather than have a whole bunch of evidence that's really circumstantial and you don't have much proof. So I think that Pelosi would probably prefer to take the strongest case and make that the singular article of impeachment. It's kind of what happened with Clinton. I mean, he had four articles that he was facing, but only two were accepted by the House. So I think that may be the approach, because they have to look at their jury. And, you know, as one political scientist once wrote about the impeachment, while it's really loose in the sense that you don't have to have a criminal act to impeach, because you only need 34 senators to upend the conviction, you really have to have something strong, because they're probably going to have the narrowest view of what constitutes something that would remove the president from office.
And in this case, you have a Republican president with a Republican majority Senate. That makes it maybe more of a tall order.
It does, except that in an election year where some red state Republicans who are running for re-election may be somewhat worried about being able to carry independence, or if they feel just somewhat jittery about the ability of the president to have coattails as the president is getting impeached and potentially removed, you may see some skittishness among some of these Republicans. It's really hard to say because we don't know the full information that we might see from some of the other documents that come. At the moment, I think that everybody's kind of staying a little bit mum until they have fuller information.
Now, this is getting speculative here about the timing, but if I'm a Republican senator, I'm maybe not going to go against President Trump before somebody can run a primary campaign against me. If this takes long enough and it's too late for somebody to primary me, does that free up my range of motion a little bit?
Yeah, it probably does. I mean, the deeper you get into the election cycle and, you know, the longer this sticks around, it becomes more of an albatross for your electoral prospects. So that is certainly the case. And but here's the thing is that since the Senate is going to run how this this trial is conducted and Mitch McConnell is the leader, he may have some political calculations about exactly how this will unfold. I mean, you could do it really early and then that way it seems as though the president is exonerated, or you could wait very deep into the process where the public is so distracted that they may sort of ignore what are the weaknesses of the president, and then he gets acquitted late, and that's the message into the last couple of weeks of the election. So there's a strategy that McConnell and the Republicans can take about how they conduct this that may very much help the president in his reelection.
Let's bring in a caller. Charlie is with us in Milwaukee. Charlie, hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. The question I have is that if Joe Biden truly was, say, compromised by his son's activities in the Ukraine, and he was going to be running a presidential campaign, doesn't it make sense that the president of the United States protect the United States from a compromised candidate? Isn't this really just the mainstream media again ignoring activities of the Democrats, and they really are out to get Donald Trump?
Charlie, thanks for the call. What do we know about the Biden side of this? That's the Charlie's on the angle that President Trump is promoting here for sure.
Right. So what we know is that Biden's son, Hunter, took a position with a gas company in Ukraine and was being paid $50,000 a month. He resigned from that position in early 2019. The White House apparently vetted this, and although that there were some suspicions that this could be, you know, deemed as inappropriate because he was a private citizen and unconnected to the activities of the White House directly, they thought it was okay. I mean, Biden got involved in this because his issue was they were trying to promote democracy in the Ukraine. And the argument was this prosecutor, who actually wasn't looking into the company for which Hunter Biden looked with any aggressiveness, he was so weak in ferreting out the corruption that Vice President Biden wanted him tossed because he wanted somebody who was more aggressive about looking into this corruption. And there was a lot of support from some European nations, apparently, for the same thing. So, I mean, I don't think that we have necessarily the full story, but what we do know about the process so far is that, yes, it looks a little untoward that the vice president's son is getting a big pile of money every month. But at the same time, the White House at the time and a lot of the reporting on the issues suggests that, if anything, Biden was pursuing more aggressive activity regarding ferreting out that corruption in Ukraine than trying to diminish it and protect his son.
As we wrap up, Charlie, what are you watching for next?
I'm watching for what Pelosi does and how she manages this, because, of course, she's got the politics with her caucus. She has to manage the collection of data and information from the White House and trying to fend off any sort of legal challenges through executive privilege of getting necessary information. So this is going to be a sticky kind of situation. But Pelosi is a very seasoned politician, and I suspect that she and her staff have talked through this. So we just have to see how this unfolds in the coming weeks.
Charlie, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks, Rob. Pleasure.
That's Charlie Jacobs, Associate Professor of Political Science at St. Norbert College in De Pere, with us with the latest on impeachment and the president's press conference earlier today. If you have questions on the workings of impeachment, you can check out a Central Times segment from June that explains the process. Go to WPR.org and search requirements for impeachment.